folks, we have another tradition that if we can make it work, we do make it work. I want to introduce this gentleman. I knew him before I was 32 years old and went to the North Dakota State Senate. I knew of him before that because he was a leader in North Dakota for a long time. Imagine a life where you serve as a state senator, you're a farmer, you're a rancher, and on any given weekend, you're inside a barrel dressed up like a clown while a bull charges down on you. That's my buddy. That's my friend, Steve Tomac. Steve, happy Thanksgiving to you. Good to have you back on, buddy.
Hey, it's great to be here. And you know what? It's a beautiful day in St. Anthony, North Dakota. God dang, the sun is shining. It's going to get 35. And I haven't figured out whether I really like this weather so much or whether we've had the last week and a half have been such a terrible snowstorm and everything, whether we just appreciate these kind of days so much. But I'm thankful. I really am.
I woke up this morning and the first thing I thought of, Steve, was why in the heck don't you have all your Christmas lights up yet? definitely going to be working on that tomorrow, I will tell you that. Now, Steve, if you ever saw Steve's ranch south of St. Anthony, the one thing that he did, and I've hunted there a number of times, visited there, played a little poker there once or twice, but Steve, you know, he invested in the next generation. And I always ask you, and I'm curious, how those shelter belts you put up are, because they're just gorgeous.
You know, they really are. And that was one of the things that my dad taught me so profoundly, because I do remember one of my childhood memories, Jack, just so you're saying, when you talk about your childhood, I love his stories, but childhood memories was weeding trees. That was the most hated, the most grudging thing to do. But, you know, that's the one thing I did the first 2 years I moved down here. And I've been here almost 40 years, Joel.
Yeah.
And so it's planted some trees, but the drought has had its toll on some of the new ones, but it's looking really good. It really is.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. My dog, I walked his belts one time looking for a pheasant that I wanted to share some things with. And my dog came out, and he looked at me like he was birdie, but he looked like he didn't want to be in there. And he had wanted to be in there. He's a good old hunting dog. And I said, no, go in there. And he comes back out again. I said, no, go in there. Yeah, he got porcupined. 80 quills they had to pull out of his schnauzer. 80 quills. Yeah, that was not good. That was not good. You know,
I remember that. It wasn't a good day.
Jack Michaels, you know, you're part of this conversation. I got to ask you, Jack.
Yes, sir.
Because, you know, you've got those beautiful sisters and that brother. You know, the reason that I call Steve, in large part, aside from being a friend, is he's one of 18 children.
Which is a record, by the way, in the state of North Dakota. But anyway, that is so congratulations.
Well, you know, Jack, I don't think it's a record by any stretch of the imagination. This ranch, when I bought this place, I bought the first three quarters in late 1982. And they raised, she was pregnant 21 times, and they raised 18 kids right in this area. And when we were growing up, there was the Schwer family, and there was the Mahar family, and there was, I think Schwer's had 18, Mahar's had 13 or 14. And so you go around there, and I'm reminded of Garrison Keillor's great quote. Yep, they were Catholic. they were all born 9 months and 15 minutes apart.
That's outstanding.
Truth to that.
You know, that's good.
Steve, the ranch that you're on now, you know, that you bought from, the family you had, describe what the house was before you added on to it. Describe what he raised those kids in.
You know, it's an amazing story, and actually they have a book that kind of recites some of that. But when I moved here in early spring 1983, the house was an old grain bin, and then it had an addition on it. It did not have running water. This was 1983, people, and so it did not have running water. The house was 20 by 32, which made it, maybe it was 22 by 30, so that would make it 660 square feet. had a basement with a coal furnace like a lot of those did. But what was amazing to me was there was a room down. There was two rooms downstairs. Right next to the coal room was the girls, was the boys' room. And then downstairs on the other side of the wall was the girls' room. And then upstairs was one room for mom and dad. And then, of course, the living room and the kitchen. And it was really pretty interesting that they raised 18 kids. Their family was a little different than ours in that the age spread was a little bit longer. Lucy was one of the oldest, and they still had three kids at home when in 83. Our family, there's 22 years between the oldest and the youngest and one set of twins. They didn't have any twins. But it was a tiny little house, but it was typical for the era.
I tell you, Joel, by the way, Steve is amongst being part of what I've now deemed a record. But if you
I've now deemed a record. As a sports guy, he can do that.
Yeah, right. If you were sitting playing cribbage at Rusty's Saloon and Grill in St. Anthony or where have you, wherever you are. But if you look up St. Anthony, and you know how you look up towns, and we do this with Coffee with KFGOs. I try to find, you know, peculiar things or history or notable people. Notable people's a big thing. I do that for sports. Notable, you know, people from this town. In St. Anthony, if you were to look up St. Anthony on Wikipedia and you go to notable people, there is only one person, Joel, that comes up.
Only one.
And he's on the air with us this morning. Steve Tomac.
How do you beat that?
I mean, that's another award for he's the only one that's outstanding.
See, Steve, you another record. Can I just say that? So I've got to ask. You know, you said they didn't have, plumbing. How many holer?
What's that?
It was a two-holer, and it was located just around back. I mean, just over here. Actually, there's a very nice pine tree growing right on that spot right now.
Well, it's got plenty of fertilizer, I would tell you that. But it's, you know.
Well, maybe.
From a standpoint of Grandpa and Grandma Berg's, they kept theirs. You know, they had running water. You know, they didn't have running water when they had the place in the beginning, but you knew exactly where the old outhouse was, and they kept it for the longest time. And I don't know why. If it was just a way of, you know, getting the boys out of the house, that type of thing, Stephen, and it what? But there were basic things that big families did, and that was one of them. Now, to be one of 18, I know that you were number two, that you were the second child. How old were you? I mean, you must have been off to NDSU when the last ones were born, I would guess.
Joel, when I was a senior in high school, you know, people, it's such an exaggeration. You know, people think, well, 18, well, it is a big number, and 15 is pretty big, too. But when I was a senior in high school, there were 15 kids at home. 15. The twins weren't born yet, and Jack was already in the Army. And so 15. Can you imagine Thanksgiving, wow. 365 days a year, Thanksgiving dinner, there was at least 15 plus mom and dad, 17 around the table just about every meal in the evening when we were growing up, or at least when I was a senior in high school.
I have a question for you, Steve. So, and this is the ability we're all about, you know, this is Thanksgiving and all that. And Joel, I know you watched Sandlot last night. So my dear friend, Maury Wills and all that, he comes from a large family, grew up in the projects in DC. And then his neighbors, the Shorts, S-H-O-R-T-S, they had like 11. I think Wills had 9, like 20 kids between just barely two over the Tomacs, by the way. But I'm curious about this, Steve, and in all seriousness, a little list from you today on items that you shared, item clothing, sporting,
question.
Right, Joel? What are some items you shared with your siblings growing up?
You know, that's really an interesting question. By the way, just as a side note, Jack, loved your stories about Maury Wills. Oh. I absolutely love them. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah.
To your question, what it would be easier to create a list of things we didn't share. Absolutely everything got shared. As a matter of fact, when I went to college, the first thing that I wanted was my own pair of blue jeans that was there when I was ready to wear them and nobody could borrow them and they were clean. So that's the very first thing when I went to college that that I really focused on was, going to have some jeans here, going to have some blue jeans. Wow. And nobody's going to be able to take them except me. But, you know, that aside, you know, that's such a small, trivial thing, really. When you think of big problems in the world and all that, you know, it may have been a big thing for us as kids, but all things aside, really wasn't a bad thing at all.
That's awesome.
But how many boys and how many girls, Stephen?
There was two baseball teams, one for the boys, one for the girls.
Nine aside.
See, but that's a little bit different in this. I know my family doesn't compare in size, but seven of us. But the five above me, I'm the youngest, were girls. And so when you get hand-me-downs, clothes.
Yeah. How'd that go for you?
How many pair of pink panties did you have to wear? Really?
I'm just saying, there are issues, and you know. But here's the other part: the girls actually would get mad, you guys, because by the time it got to me, two things happened. Number one, they had to buy things for a boy, right? And so the girls were like, "We never got new clothes like that. We never got new clothes." And then Mom and dad were done being like dirt poor because they had them all fed and off. You know what I mean? And so by the time it got to me, they had a couple of bucks in their pocket and I got a motorcycle, and they're still mad about it to this day. Just saying. And it was really, really fun watching them come home from college and I'm on my Kawasaki dirt bike, and they were still mad about that. All right, folks, time's got us a little bit. We're going to continue these stories. If you have a question for Steve about being one of 18, you can always text it in. Jack's already asked a good one. What did you share? What didn't we share? All right, and stick around. More coming your way here on the News and Views Radio Network. I keep hearing your concern. Welcome back to the News and Views Radio Network, and a happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I'm going to keep saying that because I mean it. Jack Michaels is with me. Abby Miller is with me. And one of 18 children, Steve Tomac, my old buddy from the Senate, is with as well. Steve, I wanted to ask you, you know, because I know, you know, your family of faith, and I know, you know, the Catholic family like mine, with Catholic families, they tend to be larger. I'm not saying Lutherans don't have a ton of kids, but the Catholics.
Hey, be careful now. There's five in ours.
Yeah, I know. I know. But Steve, I've got to ask you, you know, you're going to church. How did you do that with 18 kids? How did you get 18, 19, 20 people to church in time on a Sunday morning?
Well, we had Saturday evening mass in Watauga, South Dakota. And at the height, which would have been when I was a senior in high school, when there were 15 plus whatever, it was two pickups and a station wagon. So that was Saturday. And really, you know, back in those days, we sat in the front pew, or actually the second pew, as I recall. Nobody ever sat in the front pew, but we sat because there was still room there. But actually, that kind of happened when we moved to Watauga. We moved to Watauga, or north of Watauga, in 1959, and at that point in time, there were six of us. When my dad and his brother had kind of rearranged the partnership, and my Uncle Joe stayed in the homestead, which was 20 miles south of Morristown, South Dakota, and he and his brother Joe had this partnership, and they bought this ranch north of Watauga, and I don't know how they did that, but we moved north of Watauga, and when we started going to church in Watauga, I think one of the only pews left was in the front pew, and so that's where we started, and that's where we still sit as of this day when we go back to mass there. Front pew, you know, it eventually evolved to two pickups and a station wagon. We could get just about everybody in there, and well, it was four or five in a cab and a pickup, but you could still do it.
Joe, you didn't fit the whole gang into one pew. In the end, you must have had the sides. You must have had the one behind. I mean, you didn't fit everybody into one pew.
That's correct. You're right. It was the first two pews, or the second and third pew, and as that expanded, you know, now it's Now, when we go to church in Watauga, which has been a while since we've all been there, but it's usually the first three or four by the time you have spouses and significant others, then you know it's still a joy. It really is.
Yeah. I have one game, and I know we're running out of time, and Steve loves the games. I know that he likes to play. So, Joel, it's all time.
Finish the lyric?
And you're going to play. It's not finish the lyric. Joel, your time is 5 seconds. Give me the names of your siblings in your family. 5 seconds, go.
Dennis, Tommy, Julie, Heidi, Melanie, Holly, me.
5.3. Abby, give me the names of your siblings, your family, in 3 seconds. Go.
Karsten Corland.
0.98 seconds. Steve, give me all your siblings, including you.
Just however fast you can go.
What do you think, Joel?
Okay.
11, how many seconds, Joel? How much time?
He won't do it in 10 seconds.
I'll give you 15 seconds. Ready? 15? Can we do it in 15?
Yeah.
All right, Steve, go.
Okay, you ready? Jack, Steve, Tony, Miles, Charles, Kathy, Cindy, Jean, Mary, Nick, Frank, Casey, Jack, Jody, Louie, and Justin.
11 seconds. Ah! He did it.
You know, if his siblings are listening, you know the one that he paused on is like, me!
That's me!
Why didn't he say
me? I just hope I didn't. I hope somebody was counting and I didn't miss anybody.
You're forgiven.
But Jack, it's always easy to do that because when your folks were mad when you were young,
all right?
It was Dad. He was just Jack Steve Wells. God dang it, Tommy, get in there.
All right, we got more stories for That's you right. on this Thanksgiving, everyone. Bones, you be safe, buddy.
All right, brother. Good to see you.
Steve Tomac, you bet. Happy Thanksgiving. Steve Tomac's going to hang with us. We'll visit some more.
Robbie, right can't you tell that it's out of style?
Welcome back to the News and Views Radio Network. Joel Heitkamp, Abby Miller, Ryan Janke, Jack Michaels. That's our team that we've got today for you as we come to you live on this Thanksgiving Day. Steve Tomac, our guest, one of 18 children. 18 children. Steve.
All right, Joel. Joel, I know Jack was on a time thing, but I got to back up. I think my phone has been dinging off the
I'm so sorry, Steve.
Because I missed one or two of them.
No!
Folks, if you're just joining us, know this. Jack Michaels challenged him within 15 seconds to name all of the kids.
Do you want to do it again, Steve?
Well, I'm afraid I'll screw up again.
Right, right.
Big dice to roll.
Look, we're going to make you do it again. Go ahead, Stephen. Go.
Oh man.
Well, I'm gonna go a little bit slower. There's Jack, Steve, Tony, Miles, Charles, Kathy, Cindy, Jean, Mary, Nick, Frank, Casey, Margaret, Sandy, Justin, Louie, Jackie, Jody.
Now I
got them all.
There it is.
So can you just tell us in advance, what was it about Sandy that you never liked?
Stop it.
We love you, Sandy.
It was Margaret that I missed. I think Margaret and Sandy I may have missed. So.
You know, here's the thing, and Ryan Janke from our news team, you know, he's throwing some questions at Abby, and I'm
every
like, Ryan,
commercial break, yeah.
Yeah, quit working in that newsroom. Come on in and join the conversation. But he wants to know how you ever got a hot shower.
Or if you did.
Or if you did.
Well, you know, that's a really delicate because you know, up to the point of being 6 years old, we had this galvanized tub. We didn't have running water until I was six. And so it was one bathtub, essentially, or one tub, galvanized tub, that was heated on a wood stove in the middle of the kitchen. When we grew up on the homestead, until I was 6 years old, we had a galvanized tub that you heated in the summer. I suppose there was water from the outside. You let it sit, warm up in the sun, but it was heated on the wood stove, and everybody bathed in it. You didn't change water, and so it was just a matter of who was first and who was last. When we moved to the ranch north of Watauga in 59, then we had running water, But there wasn't any shower. And so, but hot water was the issue. And I think the same rule applied. It was still Saturday night baths maybe a little more frequently there. But hot water was still a bit of an issue. But generally, you learn to space that out. It really got to be a crunch on trying to make the school bus in the morning or, you know, in the evening. But there was one bathroom, and things have changed so much in those 50 years. It's pretty amazing.
Is it safe to say, Steve, that when you're in a family that size, being bashful is just tough break for you? You know, nobody's bashful in a family that size.
Well, I don't know. There's ones that are more introverted, you know, just like any family. I'm not sure.
No, I guess the point I was trying to make, Steve, is you never really got the bathroom to yourself. you never really did.
Well, you know, that might be, you know, but that was actually, that was the only place where you really have it by yourself. I remember, you know, in fairness, if you needed, you know, the boys had a little bit different, maybe, well, the girls did too, I suppose you could always go outside, but if you wanted your solitude, I remember my mother, you know, just sitting in the bathroom, just that was her space, that was her time, and, you know, it might have been 15, 20 minutes, I don't know, half hour, I don't know, but I do remember
she just wanted to get away from you guys.
Exactly, and in all fairness and in all seriousness, I think the bathroom was a place of solitude where nobody was going to bother you for obvious reasons.
So is Ryan in there? Does he have another question, Abby? I mean, I need to know. Go ahead.
Well, I have two kids, and they confuse their clothes all the time. So now I'm wondering. Obviously, I missed the conversation earlier. Maybe you said how you shared rooms and things, but how did laundry go in your home?
So everything was, you know, most everything was shared. I mean, you know, if you had if you were going somewhere, if you're going to church and there was clean jeans, it was pretty much anybody's taking if their jeans weren't clean. As far as laundry, I do remember my, you know, my mother is my, by the way, mom is still living a very good life. She's a 1934 model, and so she'll be in January. She'll be 89, and still has her driver's license, but I still remember the washing with a wringer washer in the basement, and then of course she didn't have a dryer to start with, and of course everything got line dried, which was. Oh, people today that don't experience Joel, it's like homemade bread.
I know.
Line dried.
The smell of your clothes.
Or clothes yeah. are something to be coveted. They really are.
Yeah.
But I still remember the washing and that. And the clothes were pretty much, you know, put in different drawers as to you had your own dresser. But it was pretty much free for the taking if somebody didn't have any. And there might have been a little quibble about it, but they were probably pretty minor. And so the... You know, what amazes me, what's changed is that today just about everybody has their own bathroom. As you're building new houses and doing that, I'm sure your kids will grow up that way, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Was there days for certain things? You know, for example, my mom made bread on Saturdays. Heidi did all the laundry. That was her thing because she liked to be in the what we called the laundry room, which slash also was the boys' bedroom. But she would go in there, do laundry, and read. That was her solitude. Everybody had a job, you know, but on Saturdays was the day that laundry was done. And if you didn't get it in the dirty clothes bin, tough break, you know, get off your butt and get your work done kind of a thing.
You know, that's really an interesting question. And I asked my mom because you said it at the start of the show, homemade bread is like, you know, that's right next to the best steak you'll ever eat. To me, the bread uh-huh. is everything. And I asked my mom used to bake. I do remember this. It was 20 loaves at a time. When bread baking think that right. Red Baking Day showed up. I asked her, I said, what day of the week was it or how many loaves? Well, whenever I needed to. And those 20 loaves, I for some reason, 20 sticks in my mind. But I do have the memory of this great big tub of bread dough that it was at least 2 feet across. And my mom kneading the bread, trying to get it in the right form so that she could put it in the baking pans. And that was bread baking day. And there was nothing, absolutely, in my mind, nothing better than coming into that kitchen and not only getting the smell of the fresh baked bread, but getting a slice of that warm or hot bread. Oh. And putting melted butter on it. Oh, yep. Wow.
Boy, does that sound that. Right. But
sounds good.
Real butter.
Real butter, that's right. Yep.
And, I tried explaining to my kids, you know, how, you know, with that, the butt end piece of a loaf of bread. I mean, you'd roll around on the ground and fight for that. Yeah. I mean, Steve, didn't you?
Oh, the crust. Oh, man. Yeah, that's to die for right there.
Oh, I don't want to break this up with a math equation, but I'm looking, the inevitable answer of this is going to be cents per gallon. Okay. If you take the number of children in the Tomac house, and we all know what that is now, if you've been listening, and count how many arms and legs there are of those children, and equate that to a year, what was the price of gas in that year? So number of arms and legs in the Tomac children.
Okay.
Equate that to a year, what was the price of gas in that year? Don't do the math out loud.
So what was the price of gas in 1972? Is that what you're asking?
That's exactly right. Look at how quick. See, you did have a pair of pants in college.
Well, Stephen, right about then's when you headed off to SU, isn't it? I mean, what was the price per gallon of gas?
I have the
answer.
You know,
and I don't remember exactly, but I remember the first rodeo I worked was in 1971 in Raleigh, North Dakota. They paid me $35. That was enough money to buy 2 cases of, I can't say that, can I? It wasn't, 2 cases of beer and a tank of gas, and I don't know what it was, 35 cents. I'm guessing.
How smart is Steve?
I don't even remember.
36 wow. cents a gallon. You are on your game. Wow, is he good. And see how quick he did that math and then went right to the year? And almost, that's impressive.
So, Steve, you know, when you've got brothers all close to the same age, what happened when one of you wanted to date a neighbor girl and the other one got the date instead of you? How much fighting went on with that?
Oh, there wasn't much. There wasn't much dating, fighting. Everybody kind of had their own taste. But interestingly enough, within the Tomac family and the McGregor family, which happened to live a mile and a half away, I've got two in-laws from that McGregor family, one for my brother Miles, which I'm going to Thanksgiving. Miles and Marge have this host this. They have this great, great family, which all my brothers and sisters do. But we're heading up to Miles's and Marge's, and Marge was a McGregor and lived a mile and a half away. And Miles used to, you know, get on his bicycle and go over and visit Marge in the dark of night. He'd sleep out over the window to the coal room. And steal away and go see Marge. And then my younger sister, Jean, married Marge's brother, James, Jim. And so Jim and Jean are living on the McGregor place now, and Miles and Marge, so we are related. Like, and that's pretty typical of large families. Sure. You'll have brothers and sisters marry.
In my family, there's two different sets of that. I mean, the Lingens that married the Rankies, and then there's the Mauchs that married the Lingens. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people didn't go a long way to find their spouse in a certain era. You know, it wasn't like, well, I'm going to go off and meet the other one in California. You know, it didn't happen that way.
Steve, I remember Steve when he was about 9, he got his first Instagram account. And... Then he was on Facebook and he met a girl from Japan. And then, yeah, now, Steve, what was your form of communication growing up? You didn't, when was your first cell phone? Maybe that should be the question, you know?
When was your first telephone, period,
telephone,
Steve?
Yeah, right.
Oh, you know, what was the form of communication in 1972? It was a landline, obviously. Actually, my first phone was a bag phone. My first telephone was a bag phone. And it was during the campaign when I was running for the state legislature. And sometime in the late 80s, early, must have been mid-90s. And, you know, that doesn't seem that long ago in some respects. But in other respects, it's eons ago because of the technology that has happened in the last 25 years. That's one of the amazing things in our lifetime.
Steve, before we got to go to a break here, what was your ring at home?
Now you're taxing. I think it was four shorts.
Four shorts? Two shorts and a long. I remember that at my aunt and uncle's place. But do you get what I'm getting at here, yeah, Ryan and Bones?
Yeah, like
what was your number, Joel? Joel, what was your number?
It was, we actually had four numbers. We didn't have three.
Wow, you were rich.
Yep, exactly. It was 7432 is what it was.
I would give mine out. I'd give mine out, but it would ring. I'd give mine out, but if you called it, you'd get Mother Marge. My Mother Marge, because it's still the number. The last four digits are an acronym of Lisa, by the way. But you could probably figure that. Well, go ahead, call Marge. She's up today. Let's go.
We're gonna have a surprise guest join this conversation in a bit. But stick around. More old stories with Steve Tomac right after this. Welcome back to the News and Muse Radio Network, our Thanksgiving tradition whenever we're able to pull it off. Steve Tomac, one of 18 children, is with us, and Jack Michaels is, and we have somebody new with us as well. Can you just say hi to the folks? I think Steve will recognize your voice.
Hey, Stevie. How are you doing? I heard you forgot two of your siblings.
How is that possible, huh? Right?
I have no idea. 18? You're lucky you remember half of them.
Well, that's probably, you know, as we get older, Heidi, it probably is.
You know, dad would have got mad at me because when I rattled off mine, I called you Heidi, and he never called you Heidi.
No.
You were Kathy to him.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always.
Everybody
always
had a different name, and he had a way different name for me.
Yeah, a squirrel.
That's right. So.
Or Windy.
Yeah, well, that happened too. Ended up making a living out of it, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
So, Steve, when you had to butcher, I mean, did your dad butcher, or did he take it to town, or what? Did he raise it all, the hog, the beef? I mean, to feed that many people, it had to be a production. Just, you had to butcher pretty often.
Well, you know, that I think the butchering, my memory, I'm sure that there were some pigs that we probably butchered, or maybe a beef or two along the line. But for the most part, that went to the locker plant in Morristown. The chickens, however, were all butchered at home, and that was an annual event, usually in July, August, probably before school start. And that was somewhere between 300 and 500 chickens. And it was a big event, butchering chickens, because everybody, as you would know, had their own assigned duties. Some were assigned to the killing part, or the I can't think of a better term for that other than
chopping
that.
Chopping the head off.
You know, they chopping the head off, and then watching them jump and bleed and whatever, and then some were grabbing those and boiling the water, and then plucking, and then you would the whole process. I don't need to describe in detail, but the whole process was pretty well organized. And all of a sudden, you did have a freezer full of chicken, somewhere between 300 and 500, if my memory is correct on that. And actually, that was one of the when you think about annual things or weekly things. For some reason, I have memories of Sunday evening meal which was
Hold on to that, because that's going to be too good a story to rush. And
You know what the moral of that was? The chickens got more hot bass than the Tomac kids did.
Stick around, folks. Steve Tomac, Heidi Heitkamp, Jack Michaels, Ryan Janke, Abby Miller, Joel Heitkamp. Yeah, it's got to be a round table right after this.
You got to give me a fight. Can't you just let it be?
News and Views Radio Network. Joel Heitkamp, Abby Miller, Heidi Heitkamp, Jack Michaels, and Steve Tomac, our guests from St. Anthony. Steve, first off, and this all Heidi and I are sitting here talking on the break about the number of chickens you guys said you butchered. By the way, folks, if you're just joining us, Steve's one of 18 children. So do the math on that, and then you start having girlfriends over on Thanksgiving, and it just gets bigger. Steve, let me ask you this. How big is your freezer? Did you can them? Did you freeze them all? I mean, what did you do with that much meat?
They were all I can't even talk anymore. They were all frozen, but, you know, it wasn't one freezer, obviously. There were, I think, two or maybe there were three down there at the height of things. I don't remember exactly. I remember two for sure. Two or three freezers. And, you know, chicken, even though we were ranchers, chicken was really a staple in the diet. So it was pretty typical. And when we had fried chicken, I mean, my mom, it's still my favorite meal. I know some of my brothers and sisters didn't really like chicken, but I really love chicken. I remember being 12 or 13 or 14, and my mom walked by my plate, and she said, "My God, Steve, it looks like a chicken crawled up in your plate and died." there was that many bones left there, but chicken was a big deal, and that was a big butchering, as we already talked about.
Well, it's fast to turn around, too. I mean, you could get them raised to butchering weight quick. But, Heidi, do you remember when Dad would buy all those chickens from Al Hermsen and bring them into town?
Yep.
And he'd bring them into town the night before we'd butcher. And the whole neighborhood would be like, "Ray, you know, none of us are sleeping." You know, remember? He had them in crates.
They knew the time was coming.
Yeah. Then he'd pound those two nails in a board, you know, stretch the neck, whack. And, you know,
my mother-in-law in her 80s was still the championship chicken plucker. I mean, people could not keep up with her. She had an assembly line. She'd invite all the neighbors over because she raised chickens and line them up because she couldn't eat that many chickens, but she couldn't stop raising them because that's what farm wives do, right? Got to feed the whole neighborhood. But people would literally be wanting to take a nap, and she was still out there working.
Jack, if you saw a lot of this stuff butchered, would you still want to eat it? That is the question.
I have farm relatives and all that, but I was a city guy. I grew up in Williston. I was a big city guy, you know. Well, okay, there's 10,000 people. I'll tell you, Scott, I think I still would. I think the taste of it would overcome the plucking and the decapitation, you know, the head and the runner. Gee, Dad, it's still running. I know, son, it does that. You know, all of that. Right.
Yeah, you know, Jack, you don't know what it smells like when you singe it, though.
Oh, I suppose that is a little bit of a... All I know is Heidi was talking about her mother-in-law plucking chickens and having everybody... And I just got this vision of Laverne and Shirley at Schatz's factory with the conveyor belt, like chickens coming by. Pluck, 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 and another chicken, pluck, pluck, pluck.
Or Lucy Arnaz eating chocolate.
right, just start shoving it in your mouth.
But some of the memories of the chickens are really when we, Joel, that's a great memory of bringing them in, and because we raised them. And so I remember going to the post office and getting boxes of baby chicks. So you go to the farm supply stores now in the spring, and you can kind of see them in the little tubs under the warmers. They used to be shipped in boxes that were perforated, and those chicks would come in by mail. Today, you couldn't do that because they would never be delivered on time. But by mail, we'd go to the chair, and there would be like 3 or 4 feet high. The boxes were 3 feet by 3 feet, and they were perforated, and there was probably, two dozen chicks or three dozen chicks in each one, and you'd get a stack of chicks and take them home, and that's how you started them. That's how they used to be shipped. It's when you think of memories of chicks and chickens, that has changed pretty immensely, too, over the last couple of years.
So did you pick eggs, Stephen?
Yeah, that was somebody's chores. I think that got rotated. So speaking of chores, Heidi, what was the chore, do you remember, that Joel really hated?
Burning garbage. And I don't know, it was the only job Joel ever had when he was
little.
That is
not true,
the
only job.
That is absolutely true.
Who mowed the yard?
Taking out the garbage, I mowed the yard.
You didn't. You sat in a room and read a book while you did laundry, and you still didn't get it clean. No. No. It was I mowed the yard.
You couldn't even get him to take out the garbage.
I hated taking out the garbage.
Why?
I don't know, because there was five girls there. I don't know. You do the math.
Yeah. We don't need to talk about that.
You asked. Did you not ask? I mean,
I didn't want to start a family argument here on Thanksgiving, but the only reason I bring it up was in our family, they were rotated and assigned. So every once in a while you had somebody that was assigned to pick eggs. And yes, we raised our own eggs. We had 5, 4, 3, or 6 milk cows, depending on, the size of the family, and there was people assigned to milking, and then there was the separating, and the separator, and then we had skim milk for the house, and then we separated the cream, and then out of the cream we either sold that, which was a good cash for a certain period of time, so you sold the cream or you made butter out of some of it, but everybody had their chores, including after dinner. I mean, Vicky was really surprised the other day when she learned that I actually had to do dishes as growing up, because that was one of the assignments. You had to dry dishes. And so they all got spread out in our family. And Jack, I'm curious how that was distributed in your family.
Well, carefully. I think I could have hung with the Tomax, though. By the way, because we were playing some games this morning, this is going to be between Heidi and Abby. And Steve, you're and it's a yes or no question, and I guess. So here's the question, because Joel, we're going to sit on the sidelines here. They had 18 children. Yes or no, Heidi and Abby, did the Tomax have any domesticated pets?
Yes.
Yes. I'm going to say no then.
18 children? You think they had, Heidi?
Yes, absolutely. They had cats and dogs.
Domestic.
They probably had rabbits too.
Like on your lap, come here.
In the house, you mean?
Oh, you mean in the house?
Yeah, I'm not talking about stuff running around the farm. No. Domesticated pets.
Okay.
Well, a farm cat is a domesticated cat.
Well, okay. Let's. Now we're
our farm cats.
I think, yep.
We're domesticated.
You're still going yes, Heidi? Okay.
I'm still yes. They let a dog in the house.
Abby?
I will say no to go against Heidi.
Steve?
Abby's got this one. Absolutely not. There wasn't enough room in the house for that.
Wouldn't even let a cat inside.
Oh, the cat would be the worst thing. Still ain't happening today. But the fun thing about having farm pets, though, was farm pets was when you got to do, milk cows, you could train those cats so they could catch a stream, if you know what I mean. So you'd be milking a cow, and all of a sudden you'd direct one towards the cat, and they'd line up there, and you'd direct one for a cat, and you'd hit it right square center in the mouth, and they would just love that.
Like
they
drinking out of a garden hose, Joel, right? Right on the old garden hose.
I remember Grandpa Berg being able to do that. How many, and the thing about the cats, Steve, around any farm, how important were they to keep the mice population down? I mean, they had a big job around the farm, too.
They had a big job. I'm not sure they were always doing it right, because you could always find mice, but then there were a lot of mice and a lot of cats.
Maybe if you had let them in the house, they'd been more
quiet. There you go, Heidi. There you go.
They didn't like you. Yeah.
Then they didn't want to. if we let them in the house, they'd have wanted to eat the bread, and that would have not been good.
I gotta take a little break, but I got a message from a buddy. He said, Mom would make fried chicken the day we butchered chicken. It was disgusting because of the smell that I could remember from butchering. I like chicken, but not the day we butchered them. Welcome back to the News and Views Radio Network. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, from all of us right here on the News and Views Radio Network, this whole family of radio stations. Steve Tomac, one of 18 children. Heidi Heitkamp, one of 7 children. And Joel Heitkamp, one of 6 that he liked. And Jack Michaels, one of 5 children. Yeah. And Abby, one of 3. As you can see, age-wise, it just kept going down.
It was just down. Wasn't that? Did your parents, by the way, or Steve, or yours, my dad had the old joke of, how many kids you have? 3, one of each. That's an old dad joke. Makes you think.
Yeah, it's got me thinking right now.
Yeah. One of each.
So Steve, at the farm, did you have a burn pit? I'm not talking about burn barrels now, you know, where the average garbage would go, that type of thing. I'm talking about the pit that you'd hide out in the trees somewhere where all the garbage would go, and then eventually it would get kind of doze back over and you'd dig a new one, kind of a thing. Did you have one of those at the farm?
Oh, yeah. I think all farms probably have one. We had one, too. It was about close to a mile or 3/4 of a mile from the farmstead. And, you know, you had to have a place to dispose of dead animals and all other kinds of things. So everything kind of got pushed in there, and you'd burn it and then cover it and move on to the right something right beside it. So, yep.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
He still has a burn pit. Admit it, right?
He just doesn't want to tell the EPA that.
I don't know a farmer out there who doesn't still have a burn pit.
No, you got to have one. Yeah. What I liked, Steve, was, you know, we were talking about garbage, and with the when you live in the city of Manitou, you ain't going to have a dugout, right? So you'd have to take the barrels out to what was called then the city dump. Really, I mean, the city dump. It wasn't just, you know, compost. It was garbage, right? And the old man would take me out there, Stephen, with the .22. Man, there was a lot of things to shoot out there.
Yeah, this is a great story about Brad Hipmonic. So when I was elected to the Senate, Brad thought we should have a ceremony in Manitou, and so he did. And he gave me the key to the city, and I threw it in the drawer. It was just on some kind of it was just ceremonial. I get a call about a year later saying, "Hey, do you still have that key to the city?" I said, "Well, yeah." He goes, "It's really the key to the town dump."
It was. The padlock, Stephen.
And I need it back.
He wasn't kidding either. He wasn't kidding, not one bit.
Very ceremonial.
So, Steve, was there one of those 18 that was just trouble? That was just trouble. That everybody would, they'd start a fight in every room, and then they'd go off to the next room, and they'd start another fight.
Joel?
And,
don't know. Say Margaret. Don't say Margaret. Don't say Margaret.
Well, you know, there is the standard joke about Margaret being adopted because she really didn't look like the rest of us. But that was kind of, you know, but. You know, there was such an age difference that, you know, everybody was trouble at their own point in time. And that all changed. The interesting thing is where we learned that I say quite often is we were blessed to have a family meal. And all kids need attention. They all need their strokes. We all need that. And the only fair way to compete for that at the family meal was to be funny. Because if you came to the meal with the wrong or the dinner with the wrong attitude or, all adults and kids, too, mostly kids and adults, too, I should say, have their days. If you weren't in a good mood, you were the one that got focused on. I mean, they would just pile on. And so you learned that if you wanted to go along, you had to get along and would fess up. But the only fair way to compete for those strokes was at the Tomac supper table was to be funny. And so once things got rolling, if they got rolling that evening, it was one one-liner after another, and it was just a a joyous, fun-filled thing. And if somebody came to the table in a little bit off mood or a little moody or was having a bad day, it was pile on and just... and you know, unfortunately, I don't know how your other tables were, but that's the way it was at the Tomac table.
People always talk about how you can get scarred for life. Well, draw this image in your head, right? You've got a table with extensions in it. We call them extensions that you kept behind a door and you brought out for the big dinners, right? So the table would fit just enough people so that one didn't make it, right, Heidi?
Yep.
And somebody sat in a high chair when it was
until he was 8 or 9,
and you couldn't fit the front of it on anymore, boys. And so they'd pull out what we called the breadboard, which would pull out from under the counter, and I would eat with my back to the whole family.
I would love to tell you this is not a true story, but this is absolutely a true story.
Until they started going off to college, and then they were voting on whether I still got to go over there. I'm still scarred for.
You know how Joel says that one person in the family was just the troublemaker?
Yeah.
It was Christmas, and I was never like the girly girl putting on makeup or whatever, so I was always the first girl cleaned up and ready to go to church on Christmas Eve. And so Dad and I are sitting waiting for everybody else to get ready. And Joel's sitting there, and he gets up, and he literally looked at the two of us and said, "Watch me." And he walked into the kitchen where Mom was doing somebody's hair, and pretty soon everyone was yelling at him. Then he walked into the back bedrooms, and pretty soon Denny's yelling at him. Everybody's yelling at him. He walks over into the girls' bedroom, and they're all yelling at him. And then he comes back into the living room, sits down, and says, "See, I told you." and we were probably 15 minutes late because of that nonsense.
And get this. Now they pay me to do that.
Right. Now you make a living at that.
Exactly. So Steve, how often? I mean, the whole gang. When's the last time all the Tomac kids were in the same place at the same time and took a picture?
I believe it was this summer. Actually, my dad passed away, what was it, 4 years ago, and we had planned a Tomac reunion then, so 4 or 5 years ago, but this summer we all got together in Watauga and had everybody out at the ranch. My sister Margaret, I don't want to pick on Margaret, but Margaret.
Don't say Margaret.
Margaret and her husband are really kind of broke the mold, or I'm not sure how to say that correctly, but they actually teach in somewhere over in Indonesia. Somewhere right now. So they're teaching at in embassies and have parts of their lives. So they're the ones that couldn't always be around, and they were around this summer, and so we planned a family gathering.
That is cool.
In Chicago, so we do have a family picture, and actually,
hang on, because I do want to hear more about it. I hated taking pictures, but you know, now everybody just like you cherish them after you lose your dad and mom. All right, stick around. More coming your way. More stories right after this. Doctor, my eyes. You know, it goes too fast. There's no question about that. Jack Michaels, Heidi Heitkamp, Ryan Janke, Abby Miller, and our guest of honor, Steve Tomac, one of 18 children. How am I supposed to say St. Anthony?
Snatney?
I thought it was Antony.
No,
St. Antony.
Yeah.
All right.
And in fact, Darwin, you know, he was the physician in Mandan, which all the folks from Snatney come up, and he said sometimes when they filled out where you're from, they actually spelled it phonetically. Snatney.
Snatney.
Yeah.
Is that true, Stephen?
Snatney South, you know.
So Steve, you know, they're looking out for their kids. I realize that. Your mom and dad loved each kid. When you decided to be a rodeo clown, which, by the way, Steve is in the North Dakota Cowboy Hall of Fame. He was good at it. When you decided to be a rodeo clown and start bullfighting, what did they say to you? What did your mom say to you?
You know, I don't remember. It was don't ask and don't tell kind of thing. And, you know, it kind of happened so gradually, or is one of those things that I know some, after I kind of got established, I know my mother did indicate some concern. And I don't remember a lot of, I don't remember beyond that a lot of opposition to doing that. It was just part of those things. They did actually found the opportunity to come see me perform, at least during the formative years. I do remember we were doing the Badlands Circuit Finals in Bismarck one year, and I had a lot of my nieces and nephews there. But you know what? When you talk about the rodeo clown part of it, probably the most, the fondest memory I have when we talk about large families and put the tie in this all together, I remember going to an event at the St. Michael's Catholic Church Hall in Watauga, South Dakota, and it was an anniversary or a some kind of celebration, and in the fall of the year, and I walked into the kitchen, and there were three or four of my nieces or my nephews, I get nieces and nephews, that were playing with some of the items in the kitchen, and they had dug in this church hall, they had dug out this big pot that pot boil, you know, aluminum, steel, whatever it was. It was like 2 feet across and 2 or 3 feet high. I used it to boil potatoes in. Yeah. And they had pulled that out, and they were trying to, they were fighting a little bit, or they were discussing who was going to get to be the barrel clown and get inside the pot to be the barrel. And that was probably one of the, you know, they say imitation is the highest form of flattery. That was really a touching moment
yeah.
for me.
That's pretty cool.
I want to show you a talent that very few people, if any, really have in life. Steve, let's assume that the bull is named Fu Manchu. And that Steve Tomac gets rolled pretty good. Jack, call that bull ride, would you?
Well, good to have you here at the Old Johnson Saddle Barn for today's rodeo action. And now on the first horse out of the chute is Jumpin' Joel Heidkamp. He'll be riding Bo Cephas. 8 seconds to get her done, and out of the gate they go, and Heidkamp's been bumped off. He's off, and now we got to save Joe. Oh, here comes the rodeo clown. Oh, Nelly, Tomac is the one. He's coming in, Steve Tomac to his left, to his right over there. He's got Bo Cephas by the tail. He's got him on the tail. He's ushering him out of the gym, and now they're both at Rusty's Saloon in St. Louis. Heidi, do you see what he does, Heidi? He puts me on the spot like that.
You rise to the occasion.
I have to.
There was a lady at Diener's Diner the other day. Abby and I are sitting at the table, and he starts calling her buying her a piece of pie.
Sitting down, looking at the pie, yeah.
She's looking at the pie. She sits down. She's looking at the pie. She hasn't chosen yet.
I see what greeters are making at various stores across the state. If I can get paid $16 an hour to be the Diener's Diner greeter. That was going. Yeah, that's right. Oh, I was doing that. That's a job.
It's Bo Cephas, Steven. That's what you grab
Bo
the tail
Cephas,
of
Steve,
it.
Right?
So, Steve, I know, you know, everybody thinks that the worst you ever got hurt in a rodeo, in a big-time rodeo, was from the bull. But tell them the story of when you got hurt the worst.
Actually, yeah. So, I mean, the bulls are kind of minor in some of these things. But I was doing a rodeo in Missoula, Montana. And it was a series. I mean, this was the whole story is that it was a series of bad luck weeks because I had just come from Caldwell, Idaho. Fantastic rodeo, 5 perfs. They sell it out where the cowboys are the stars. And I was on my way out of town, on my way to the next rodeo in Missoula, Montana. It was the middle of August. I think it was 1990 or 89, one or the other. And I got just north of Boise, about 20 miles, and I blew up the engine in my truck. And so that started this whole thing. And somehow or another, I got back and got the rig pulled back into Caldwell. The Ford dealer was one of the sponsors of the rodeo, and they were going to fix it. And so they gave me this loaner. It was a little Ford Bronco that I could tie my barrel on the back and throw in a few walk-ons. throw in a few walk-on acts, and so I headed to Missoula, Montana. I'm on my way to Missoula, Montana, and I get there, and it's raining. I mean, it is raining. It's cats and dogs. You're in the Western Montana County Fair and Rodeo in Missoula, Montana, and it's raining cats and dogs. They've got a covered grandstands, and it's full, which is amazing. And the only thing I could think of to do was, I mean, what do you do if you got a foot of mud out there? You try to entertain and get going. And so I had went to the local gas station or the local farm supply store, and I picked up a big tractor tire inner tube. And I thought, you know what? This is going to float out there anyway. So you're out there and you're doing, you know, trying to do fill in between the acts or in between the events and here and there. And I tie a rope around the tube, and I, without even thinking or giving any instruction, I throw the end of the rope to the pickup man. I said, take me for a ride. And he did. have you ever been ice skating and you play crack the whip and the poor guy on the end of that you do like a 4 or 5? So we go, that pickup man says, oh, yeah, I can do that. And he spurs his horse a little bit, and away we go. And we go around that first corner coming right in front of the grandstands, and it was like, ruh-roh, he didn't turn the corner quite sharp enough, and we're going, I mean, I'm sailing at the end of this 40-foot rope about 90 miles an hour, going way wide, and I'm thinking, ruh-roh, here comes the fence. And it wasn't so bad if I'd have hit 3 feet or 5 feet on one side, but I hit, there's this about a 1 foot steel post that holds the grandstand up, kind of fed in cement right there. And if I'd have hit 5 feet on one side or the other, so I bounced off of that, was able to flip the tube up just enough to bounce off that. And that's the only time they ever carried me out of the arena in an ambulance. How they got the ambulance in and out of there, I don't know, because it was a foot deep. And fortunately, you know, it wasn't anything real serious. I cracked 4 vertebrae and bruised the kidney, and was laid up. And the toughest part about all that was, you know, cracked vertebrae are similar to cracked ribs. They just, the pain stays with you forever. To this day, I still can't get out of bed without dropping my left leg over the edge of the bed just so I can sit up and get out. But the real tough part was, 10 days later, I had a bullfight. I was a barrel man for a bullfight in Walla Walla, Washington. And so I was kind of trying to get healed up enough and get tied up enough or taped up enough where he could actually sit in that barrel and take the hits for the bullfight. And I do remember world champion bullfighter Rob Smets was one of the bullfighters. And they had a pet of Borba fighting bulls. So the background on the Borba fighting bulls, these are bulls that are bred near Salinas, California, that are Mexican lineage, and they're just bred to fight. They're just mad all the time. And they come out, and they are hot. I mean, these bulls come out, and you get the green ones, the ones that have never been in many arenas. They come out, and they don't know when to quit. They will fight till their dying breath. They'll just keep on and on and on. And we get in the middle of this green pen, and there's three bullfighters. And fortunately, the one with the worst bull was Rob Smets. And I remember this was 10 days after that. And I just remember sitting down, and I had taken my pain meds, and I was kind of thinking I was ready. And this bull hits the barrel. We go flying in the air for like 10, 12 feet. Fortunately, we land, or unfortunately, we land with the open end to the bull, and here he comes and gets a horn and half his head inside the barrel.
Oh.
Fortunately, Rob Smets is there, and I still remember sliding a little bit, looking over that, and Rob, I can see in slow motion, you can see the hand come inside the barrel, grab the horn, yank it outside of the inside of the barrel, straighten the barrel out, and then, of course, you go for the somersault ride that you do on that. And I just so thankful I had the champion on that particular bull. And that was, but that's probably the worst I ever got hurt was in Missoula, Montana.
There are a couple messages coming in.
Wow.
It's the bad accidents that go in slow motion. It really is. Yeah. I mean, when I flipped off that bridge, it went in slow motion. It really did. Joel, talk about being at a crowded dinner table. Try being the only left-handed eater in the group.
That's my sister.
Well, Joel, you might have some experience in that. My brother Miles was the lefty, and that's still kind of an issue. And you learn pretty fast that, okay, Miles doesn't get to sit here. He's got to sit here. He's got to sit on the corner. And our family dinner table was, I think it was like 20 feet long and 42 inches wide. It had a bench on one side, chairs on the other side. It got split up to the split against the wall during the day, and then it was pulled out. And the benches were kind of nicely underneath, so you either sat against there, a wall on a bench, or you had the luxury of a table. And then on Thanksgiving Day, which it is today, we all have the adults table and the little kids table, and that was in another room, and it was a big question. I'm interested in how you guys did Thanksgiving, because then it was, okay, the little kids table, the little kids got fed first and they went into the other room and then the adults ate later.
Oh, no way. We got fed last.
I actually remember after you guys were gone, they fed us so we'd get out of there and we wouldn't be so loud. Oh. They'd feed us, me and the Malt kids, gone.
No.
See,
no.
When we come back, Steve, I got a specific question for you that's come in through our text club, our iConsultants of North Dakota text club. Welcome back to this Thanksgiving edition of News and Views. We only have a little bit, time left. Somebody wants me to ask Steve Tomac, one of 18 children, who's our Thanksgiving guest, to ask him about Flint Rasmussen. They said they think Flint got his first rodeo in Minnesota because Steve's camper started on fire. True story or not, Steven?
You know, I don't think it was his first rodeo, because in what year was that? I was on my way back. I was from a tour of rodeos on the West Coast, and it was late in the year. I'd been on the road for 6-8 weeks, whatever it was, and I was in a hurry to get home. And I was actually, I was on the West Coast and spent the night in Butte, Montana, at a truck stop where, you know, with those live-in campers, you just crawled in the back and lived in your living quarters. And it was a strong northwest wind that day. And I remember getting just west of Dickinson, about a mile or so. And this couple waved frantically at me and pointed to the back. And I looked in the back and I thought in my rearview mirror, and I saw some smoke coming out of there. I thought I blew a tire or something, and so I pulled over to the side of the road, and my camper was on, or my whole trailer was on. And in 25 minutes, I lost everything I had accumulated for 25 years. It was, you know, and the interesting thing about it was that the fire had started in the fire inspector, the fire truck act that I had and showcased as my feature act. It had started in the fire truck somehow or another, because I had that loaded in the back. But a couple interesting stories about this is you're doing all this frantic stuff, and it's like a trailer's off, and they try to call 911 or somebody called the fire department, and I had dropped the front jacks on the trailer, and I uncoupled the ball out of my pickup and thinking I could just start the generator and lift the trailer off the truck, at least save the truck. Well, you know what? To start the generator, you got to turn on the propane. So that probably wasn't the smartest thing, or a very smart thing. And so as the fire spread before the fire department got there, It was right in the middle of the trailer, but because I had dropped the floor jack or the front jacks on the trailer, the trailer buckled. It was like the finger of God came down from heaven and pushed the middle of the trailer so that the jacks held it up, and it brought the tongue off the truck, and I could actually drive the truck out. And so And so it was, a story of stories anyway. So that happened. And one more touching story on that, and this will capsulize the whole Thanksgiving, because I used to do this act where you do movie tryouts and you'd get three kids, various ages, like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or something. And you get them in there and they'd have to walk and they'd have to talk and then they'd have to play dead, because that's what actors do. So you'd have movie tryouts. Well, I, at the end of each one of those acts, I'd give each one of those kids a buck to go buy a Coke or something. One of the better citizens of North Dakota, or I should say she worked for the state Department of Transportation.
I got 1 minute, Stephen.
her daughter happened to be one of the kids I picked. And so her mother, a week or a couple of days later, read her the new headline that was in the Bismarck Tribune. It says, Steve Tomac lost this. And so 2 weeks later, I get an envelope addressed to Steve Tomac, Rodeo Clown, St. Anthony, North Dakota. And in there was a note from her mother and $1 saying that when she had learned of the story that I had lost everything, she wanted to give back. And so she went to her piggy bank and got that dollar. And that was one of the most touching moments of my whole life. And I am so thankful for that. Back to Flint Rasmussen. He was started before that. I did a rodeo.
I got to go, Stephen. The clock's got me, but what a great way to end it. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Abby. Thank you, Ryan. Good riding with you, folks. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.